This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Glad to be back in action today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Ambassador Gordon Sondland, former EU ambassador under Trump. Remember, he's somebody that really backs the way the president's approaching in an unorthodox way his diplomacy. And we got a big day on Friday. And Lawrence Jones is in studio. And I have an announcement for Lawrence because I took his advice on something. And I think you might have put it together, but I haven't said anything yet.
Okay.
Even we were.
There's no telling what you were up to.
We had 3 hours of television, and this has not come up. I cannot believe I didn't.
You kept the secret.
Let's go to the big three.
Number three.
My administration would be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. I will actually deliver in a manner where he is simply betrayed.
There goes Zohran Mamdani. How could he still be leading? He's found to be living in a rent-controlled apartment despite his wealth. Can you say hypocrite? His socialist group is now anti-family. That's been exposed. And now he wants to be Donald Trump's worst nightmare? Really? Go to war with the federal government to help out New York City? Is there anything dumber? We look at the race.
Number two.
If they want to evade that arrest, they're going to have to stay outside of the state of Texas for literally years. And they might as well just start voting in California or voting in Illinois, wherever they may be. We are incapable of conducting business for the people of Texas because they have fled.
Yep, gerrymandering madness continues this week as Texas lawmakers hold out without payment thousands of miles away while Dems queue up a response in blue states to move few on the right fear any reprisals because there's a lot more movement in the red states. I'll explain.
Number one.
We have a shot at it. Look, it's got to be solved. You're losing thousands of people a week, Russians and Ukrainians mostly.
Deal in Ukraine. I love the summit with Putin, but let's bring in Zelensky and get something done in Alaska and end this three-year war. Lawrence, your thought. Well, first off, great to see you.
We love our Mondays now. We missed you, man.
Yeah, I had to go away. I was at our Caribbean Bureau.
Everybody needs a reset so you can come back stronger.
Right.
And there's a lot of news for you to get to.
Absolutely. So this summit in Alaska on Friday, I don't think there's any preconditions at all going in. My hope is if Vladimir Putin realizes there's a huge downside if you embarrass the president. And he might be evil, but he's not dumb.
Well, that is the one condition. I don't think you even have to be a rocket scientist or a great, you know, analyst to realize that the president has ratcheted up his rhetoric against Russia as well as Putin. As he says, he's not happy with Putin. Putin would tell him one thing in the mornings, and then at night he was killing all these people. Right. And so the president has made it very clear. He's been wanting this meeting for a while. And the president has made it very clear. Then we need something. We need a deal. I'm not just going to meet with you just to meet with you. So the question is, does Putin come to some type of agreement before? Now, what that is, I don't know. The one thing that I'm worried about, Brian, is that apparently Zelensky doesn't have the approval yet. They have to vote on it to give up territory. So what does that mean in the negotiation? I'm not sure.
A couple of things I think is significant. There seems to be some confusion.
Yeah.
So Zaporizhia is one region that would be swapped for basically all of the Donbas region. Mm-hmm. So that's what they mean by swaps. Now, the thing you could always do is what we did in the Cold War. We knew that Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia was part of the Soviet Union, behind the Iron Curtain. But we never acknowledged that they were part of the Soviet Union legally.
Right.
So we could do the same thing. We could say, all right, 20% of the country occupied by Russia, they're going to be there. We're not going to have any, the Ukraine's not going to have any push to take it back. Crimea too. But you don't acknowledge it because it was stolen. You can't acknowledge this type of, and support this type of behavior. But you do have to look at reality.
Right.
Reality is it's going to be almost impossible for Ukraine alone to push back these troops. Then you factor in Russia's 17,000 North Korean troops, the Yemeni troops mm-hmm. that they're using mm-hmm. right now, Belarus.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Brian, I think the nitty-gritty details, that's going to come later on. I think the one thing that Putin has to agree to during this meeting in Alaska is a ceasefire immediately. There can't be any ambiguity on it. There has to be either 30-day, 15, 2-week. There has to be, he at least has to agree to that. If the president doesn't walk away with that, expect the sanctions to go in, the weapons, the offensive weapons to go to Ukraine, all of that.
Here's what Dave Ignatius said of the Washington Post. Cut 8.
The swap that's important here is Ukraine might give up territory in exchange for real security and a guarantee that this war won't start again after these negotiations. And that's what I'm going to be looking for at Friday's meeting. Is there any sign that Trump has learned that a peace that's simply acceding to Putin's demands is not going to be a peace that lasts? If there is pressure on Russia, if Russia really gives up something, above all, the desire to destroy Ukrainian independence, then we might have a real peace deal.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that they get EU membership instead of NATO? Does that mean that they get conjoined with all of these countries from an economic standpoint, but not when it comes to a military standpoint? But it's almost synonymous. You know, your military interests and your economic interests are often joined together.
Well, here's what I think is going to be it. They have to have international troops there. It's got to be a tripwire. UK has already volunteered. France will put some troops in there. They could go over what it would look like. Now, that's a no-go for Putin, but there's got to be some give and take.
100%.
So, and what Zelensky said, and I actually talked to the president last night about it. He's like, yeah, Zelensky said he's got to go check with people. We go, well, he has to. It's parliament. It's a democracy. He goes, well, he's got to get it done. They don't have a choice. All right. And it's true. I found a Gallup poll. A Gallup poll, they asked the Ukrainian people 2 years ago. They said, here it is. Let me get this. Okay. This Gallup poll was conducted in early July. 69% of Ukrainians said they favor a negotiated end to the war as soon as possible. 24% said keep fighting. When they asked the same question in 2022, 73% favored Ukraine fighting until victory.
Wow.
But now you're watching. So, for example, you go on the front lines, we'll fight it.
Right.
Now the drone warfare, the going after hospitals and homes and oil and gas and apartment buildings.
Too much. It's going after civilians. And, you know, it's almost a video game in a sense with real world consequences. It's become a drone war, back and forth, back and forth. So, again, we'll see what happens at this meeting. I think it would be a win for the world if we can get an immediate ceasefire. Does Putin play that game, or is he trying to is this the KGB guy that's coming out trying to play mental games with the president? We'll see.
So here's what Mike Pompeo told me last night on One Nation. What he says is, what could happen if they drop the ball Friday, cut 7.
I know it's complicated with the Chinese Communist Party, but they are a real adversary, and we ought to impose these sanctions against them, against the Brazilians, against everyone who is using this sanctions regime to their benefit. We can't let them get away with this. We have to put pressure on the Russian economy. We know how to do this. We did it against the Iranians in Trump 1. President Trump can do it against the Russians now and put real pressure on Putin to get the ceasefire that President Trump wants and a good outcome for the United States of America.
I think what also the secretary is alluding to, because the president has made it very clear, hey, if you want to trade and do business with Russia, you're going to have hell to pay when it comes to the economic sanctions as well as the tariffs. And he was talking about India. Many people want to see China. Now, my sources and administration say, you know, there's a lot of other back and forth going on with China, but that's going to come as well. The pressure on China when it comes to their business with Russia, that's going to come right now. They're just kind of phasing out. Will that happen? We'll see.
So interesting with China, because today's the deadline for them to get some type of
Correct.
Framework. Right?
Correct.
Today's the deadline. And what they're doing is interesting is with President Trump, he looked at it and says, I got to avoid at all costs them taking Taiwan.
Right.
Now, I don't know if we have the naval capacity right now to stop an immediate invasion of an island that's just miles away from them.
100%.
That they've been doing dress rehearsals on. So what they got to do is make the economic risk seem too formidable. And also, China is really into this pride thing. They're always about being insulted.
Right.
So president's playing that game. So if he's trying to work the nuances
this
deal, and all of a sudden we hit him with 100% tariffs on oil, I'll get there. But I would slam Brazil, though. I would slam Turkey.
But the idea that he's not aware of it, Brian, and doesn't want to go after China. That's simply not true. He's just weighing other economic factors. There's multiple wars going on right now economically and, of course, on the battlefield as well. So I think the China stuff is going to eventually come.
All right. So when we come back, I tell Lawrence in what way our family took his advice when we return.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we are back. Lawrence Jones is here. So Lawrence, we had a big decision as a family, because I have a Great Pyrenees.
That's right.
And I had she had two brothers.
That's right.
She was a puppy, and the brothers were 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
They both passed away. Rocky and Apollo passed away within months of each other. So the dog's alone. Has not been the same since.
Oh, yeah.
So the theory, and you're better at dogs than I am, you actually train dogs.
Yeah.
One of the things you
have right.
many skills is we should get another dog. The dogs used to be in packs, was surrounded on a farm by other dogs, never been alone before. So then we think you get a Great Pyrenees. And then we started bringing up the Bernese Mountain Dog.
Which
so
I
showed you both the pictures and the bios. I go, Lawrence, which your... And my whole family's saying, what does Lawrence
say? No.
And they say, what did Lawrence say? So we had... So the Great Pyrenees people are foster parents. So,
oh, wow.
So they were looking... They found these three puppies, they say. And they said they needed to do a video of me on FaceTime to see my whole yard. They called my vet to
they
see
take
what
it
kind
seriously.
Of yeah. Told my vet to see what kind of
guy
dog parents
right,
are, right.
right?
So they do that questionnaire.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be kidding me. They get the Great Pyrenees rescue.
Uh-huh.
So we're thinking going back and forth, and then the Bernese Mountain Dog. So we went Bernese Mountain Dog.
Oh yes, yes,
so,
yes.
And it comes on
beautiful dog guys.
Comes Thursday.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Right.
So two different organizations.
Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel we feel bad about the rescue because we like the idea of a rescue.
Right.
But we also know I spent so much money on, and my dogs, Rocky Apollo, great. Deaf. One's deaf.
Right.
They both had knee operations. Rocky had four. So
right.
I'm going to Cornell University, which if you guys listen around the country, it is 200 miles from my house.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's checkups.
And believe me, we're not anti... You know, shelters and all that.
Oh, I'm all for
but
that.
One
but you
thing
don't know
that
your
you
background.
Have to take into consideration. You know, I work with mostly on a farm dogs, which you know you can track their lineage, their genetics. You know, and so you pretty much know what runs in the family.
Yeah.
You don't have that luxury
no.
when it comes to going to a shelter. So good on you. You've done your public service. I think it's okay to get the mountain.
You think so?
100%.
Okay. You know what I love too? Like when you look into the family's background, it's never like, hey, he was runner up. No, they're all champions,
oh, yeah.
right? Like
oh,
these
yeah.
are champions.
That's
like,
important.
Third place. No. They're all champions.
100% because that people care. And it's not just like the dogs, it's the cows, it's the people track the genetics of this money and the genetics, the horses and all that type of like that, those, you're going to have a great dog. This is going to be good. You deserve it. You deserve it. Well, it's going to be great for the family.
So how soon do you want to meet the dog? When do you want to meet the dog?
I probably next week I'll be ready to go and do a full assessment, see the temperament, see how he's getting along with the
other dog. You can tell in 12 weeks what kind of temperament?
Oh, yeah. You can tell the temperament within, you know, 4 weeks. You know, when they selected Nala, it was really hard because they said, okay, you got this military canine, these great genetics, but you're going to be around people all the time. So you want the dog to protect you, but also like the people. And they got it down to the science. They could tell her temperament immediately, and she's great around people.
Because you can't worry about kids.
No,
you
can't worry about kids. Or
you know,
people,
kids will grab the ears and
like,
twist it.
I'm in a diner. Packed diner for a whole year. Me and Nala traveled over 500,000 miles, and people running at you and everything, and Nala's just following me through the diner, and she knows what's a threat and what's not a threat.
Have you gotten people, because we all get this, because
yeah.
You know, we're on television.
Yeah.
Have you gotten people walk up to you and go, I hate what you guys do. How could you be at five? And does she pick up on
100%,
the negativity? She can pick up on the negativity.
100%. It's funny because we actually had an incident where this guy was like following me, and I saw him following me, but I didn't really like put that much there. He was, you know, kind of a wimpy guy. And so me and her just going, I just been and I'm walking her going through, and this guy comes behind me, and she unleashed immediately. Before she could sense it.
Wow.
I was like, hey, dude, you just got to chill out. And when I told her to calm down, she was like, she made the point, and it was time to go.
Wow. Quick question. Yeah. I didn't know about the PBR thing. Tell me about this.
Oh, this is great. Fox Nation is now streaming all the PBR. This is a Fox Nation exclusive now. They have such a great production team. These guys are real pros. Remember, they broke off from the traditional rodeo, and now it's a team sport now. And I just had the great opportunity to allow me to host. I'm like, I don't know anything about that. I know about, you know, amateur
Texas
stuff from being a Texan and attending the rodeos when I was younger. But the point system was very easy to pick up on, and they let me do some commentating. I was really honored to be able to do that. Those guys are just great. This is going to be a great. And Chris Jansen loves Fox News. He could not have been more gracious to the Fox audience.
Is he the play-by-play?
No, Chris Jansen, remember the country singer? He's been...
Oh, Chris Jansen.
Yeah. He's great. Great family. Canceled the day on his tour to come out here to show love to the audience. And this is one of 12 different events Fox Nation is going to be doing with PBR.
And right now it's streamed.
It's streaming right now, yep, on Fox Nation. Only on Fox Nation. It's a pretty good gift for us.
Well, it's great. And it looks like there's some of the on the sizzle reel already. It's So the big question is, have you changed your vacation around to make yourself available in Texas August 23rd in Dallas?
Let me tell you
for the History, Liberty, and Laughs that's streaming on Fox Nation.
Brian started some drama when it comes to the situation because I'm speaking at another event, a veterans event this day, and the organizer has
a veterans event
as well. And I go train with my dog, and the lady that's running the event say, hey, I got a bone to pick with you. Are you not showing up to this event for the veterans? I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, Brian Kilmeade has said that you're going to be in Dallas. The event is the same day as Brian's event. But I'm going to make it up to Brian. I'll see y'all in Richmond.
In Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia.
So, Allison, you heard that, right?
I heard it. Confirmed.
Okay. We got to get some parts for him. I got some. There's going to be auditions. I mean, I just can't just roll you
and
out
I'm a
there.
Terrible actor, so this is going to be terrible.
Then
and I don't know what to do.
That's perfect. It is.
The audience is going to be making fun of me.
No. It is meant to be fun. The whole thing is meant to be fun. Yeah.
Fun making fun of LJ. This is going to be great.
Right. Absolutely. and then... Well, we'll have to see where it goes. But just go to BrianKilmeade.com, and Lawrence Jones will not be showing up because veterans, that's a very important thing.
Very important event.
I just thought it was going to be another one of your vacations. You know, one of your...
Yeah, because I take so much vacation.
Well, when are you going away?
The end of the month. End of the month.
You're going to the end of the month?
Yeah, for
vacation. Now, I think Ainsley's going away at the end of the month, too. Am I going to just have to sustain the show myself?
You may have to sustain the show.
Do you think no co-hosts, just
no.
me? Brian
no.
in the morning?
He would love that. His dream comes true. He can talk about Russia and Ukraine.
Nonstop.
General
and
Jack King.
And trade.
And trade.
Ambassador Gordon Sondland next. Lawrence, I'll see you tomorrow. Fox see and Friends. You,
this is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're going to have a meeting with Russia. Start off with Russia. You're looking at territory that's been fought over for 3.5 years with, you know, a lot of Russians have died, a lot of Ukrainians have died. So we're looking at that, but we're actually looking to get some back and some swapping. It's complicated. It's actually nothing easy.
So the President of the United States is taking a bit of a risk over to Alaska. I know he's pumped up about the opportunity to do something good. He's not there to make small waves. He wants to make big waves and make the world a better place, especially when it comes to bringing peace. He wants to go back to good old-fashioned making deals on trade, not on life and death. So he's hoping that Vladimir Putin understands that if he comes in with these demands of no EU, no NATO, keep land that we have and grab land that we haven't won over yet, don't have an army, more than 9,000 people, have immediate election. All this demands, it's never going to work. Even if Trump said, that sounds great, Europe won't sign off on it, and Zelensky won't sign off on it. Ambassador Gordon Sondland joins us now, former EU ambassador under Trump for 2 years, and he's going to tell us about what he thinks going to happen in this meeting. Ambassador, welcome back. What are the stakes on Friday in Alaska?
And while the stakes are huge, and it's going to be very difficult to negotiate with Putin without the Europeans stepping up and saying that they're going to provide the boots on the ground in Ukraine if these negotiations don't go anywhere. That's the first piece. The second piece is the discussion with Putin has to be almost like a backwards discussion, which is regardless of what land we allow you to keep or to take or whatever, what do we get to do to you if you invade again? That's got to be the question up front. And the answer to that question is any number of things. Number one, Ukraine gets to join NATO immediately. NATO will defend Ukraine whether they join or not. There have to be such high stakes for Putin if he goes one inch back into prohibited territory again that the security guarantee is almost absolute. And I'm not sure he's going to agree to that. So we're back to boots on the ground, and they need to be European boots, not American boots.
Well, you have the volunteers already. I mean, I thought that would be tough, but France and UK have already said, yeah, we'll help out. I'm sure others would be interested, but that's where Vladimir Putin goes, no, I don't want any international troops there.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have a choice. Look, Russia is so weakened, if you just took the Scandinavian countries alone, you know, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, just those countries alone, without even including Germany, France, the UK, they could crush Russia just on their own. So the teeter-totter has been teetered, if you will. And it's now time for the president to get really tough with Putin. He's given him enough leeway to try and make a deal. I know he's trying a grand bargain to pull him away from China and reward him for doing that with maybe a small piece of what he took in Ukraine. And I think he was trying to persuade Zelensky to give in a little for the common good. But Putin isn't having any of it. Putin wants the whole enchilada, and he's not going
to
get it.
So why is he agreeing to Alaska? I mean, he could have just kept doing what he's doing and had icy relations with us, and we could have gradually put on stricter sanctions. Why does he want this meeting in Alaska?
Oh, I think he's going to try and charm Trump along, and I think Trump sees through that. But, you know, Putin is an ex-KGB guy, and, you know, you always want to get in front of people if you're a spy. You know, there's nothing like looking someone in the eye and giving them a complete line of BS, which is what Putin will do and has done.
So there's some disagreement on what Steve Witkoff thought Putin was offering. First, he said they would pull out, Russia would pull out Zaporizhia and Kherson in exchange for complete control over Donetsk. Then later he said, well, they just want complete control over Donetsk. So Are we having problems with the interpreter? You know, Steve Witkoff's not somebody to tell fables. So what do you think's happening there?
No, Steve Witkoff's a very smart guy, and he clearly heard what he heard. And Putin retreated, and Putin is always retreating. So, you know, it's that simple. It just goes back into the same pile of garbage we just talked about a moment ago. Trump has to tell Putin in no uncertain terms, the war is over. The Europeans are going to take you on. We're going to back them, but we're not going to put American troops on the ground. We've given you every opportunity. And by the way, if this happens and we win, your presidency is over for all intents and purposes. Is that what you really want?
Here is Zelensky yesterday. Listen.
No one will retreat from this, and Ukrainians will not give their land to the occupier. Any decisions that are against us, any decisions that are without Ukraine, are at the same time decisions against peace. They will not achieve anything. These are dead solutions. They will never work.
So that's what they're saying. Like, he's worried about being left out. Is Zelensky, should Zelensky make a hard push to be there, even if it's in another room?
No, I think Zelensky actually has more gravitas by saying, if you don't want me there, talk all you want. There will be no deal without our consent. It's in our Constitution. We cannot give things away without, you know, parliamentary consent, and that may require a constitutional amendment. And I assume, I'm not an expert on Ukrainian constitutional law, but I assume it's as cumbersome as amending our Constitution. So that, you know, by enshrining that into their Constitution, they did a very smart thing. It prevents someone from waking up on the wrong side of the bed and making a bad deal for the long-term good of the country.
Here is the NATO General Secretary, Mark Rutte, cut four.
He is still the main threat to the Western alliance. There's no doubt. And I think it is very good that President Trump will test him. And we'll see how far he can get on Friday, starting this process. We had a great NATO summit under his leadership, committing to 5% defense spending. So that is a clear signal to our main threat, which is Russia, that we are serious. On Friday, it is important to see how serious Putin is. And the only one who can do that is President Trump. So it's really crucial that a meeting takes place. It will not be the final say on this. There will not be the final deal on this. Of course, Ukraine will have to be involved in Europe. But it is important to start the next phase of this process.
So, you know, he's been an advocate for Trump. He feels he understands President Trump, understands how what an asset he's been in terms of getting other NATO allies to put up more money and take this whole thing more seriously. Germany now looks like they're going to build up their military. So by telling NATO, don't count on us if you're not going to come across with your own investment, I think helped his organization. And I think he's still backing Trump while still laying out his beliefs.
Well, first of all, the relationship between Rutte and Trump has been absolutely tremendous. Jan Stoltenberg and Trump had a decent relationship. And frankly, Stoltenberg told me one day, you know, in a moment of candor, when he was listening to Trump railing against the Germans for, you know, not even coming up above 2%, that this guy is the best effing dues collector we've ever had. And the problem in Trump one, Brian, was that he was confronted with so many other headwinds in the form of two impeachments and a lot of lawfare. He was never really able to follow through. He's got a little more clear sailing this time, and you could see in a few months what he was able to do that multiple presidents from both sides of the aisle were unable to do with NATO.
You know what? And Ambassador, I know you thought about this, talking about Ambassador Gordon Sondland. How much damage was done to U.S.-Russian relations that, you know, Vladimir Putin does a great job of doing damage to the West. Get it. And that's his focus. He feels he's oppressed and he's been done wrong. But when you make up things that he did, that he didn't do, and blame him for it, and then Trump goes, it doesn't sound like him. And then you think about Helsinki, and now we're getting all these revelations about how this was a plot and plan to destroy his presidency. Here's Devin Nunes on the new revelations that have come forward with the annex to the Durham report that was just exposed. Cut 39.
What Brennan never did during that time period, okay, is tell us. He never came to me as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee in 2016 and said what he told Obama. Through all the investigations in 17 and 18 and 19 and 20, He never said that, oh, yeah, I had told Obama and these people about the Clinton, the Steele dossier and all of
that. That Clinton was coming out with a new story that Trump colluded with Russia.
Right. That happened in August of 16. He had a lot to say.
So Nunes is so frustrated, but he was ahead of his game. Give me the European perspective of how this was viewed.
You know something? I don't think the Europeans care one way or the other. The Europeans want to be left alone by Trump. They love the status quo. They liked their deal before the tariffs went into place, before he had the big negotiation. You know, when you have two parties to a deal and one party is advantaged, the party that's advantaged never picks up the phone and calls the party that's disadvantaged. So the Europeans don't really want to talk to us. They were happy. And Trump said, you know, you've been happy for 50 years. It's now our turn. And that's why he pushed this, you know, whole trade realignment. And, you know, the Europeans are now going to have to pay in the form of these tariffs and some barriers that have been dropped. And I don't think Trump is done there. I think that was the first bite of the apple. I think he's going to ask for a lot more in the coming couple of years. And the Europeans should buckle up because it's high time that the U.S. put their foot down in terms of access to our market.
Okay, I'll have a better question. What do you think it did to Russian-U.S. relations? We know there's always going to be a challenge. But to go blame them for the stuff they didn't do, when they had intelligence that Hillary Clinton was doing this, about to blame them in order to stop Trump, what do you think they were thinking? How did it affect relations?
You know something, you're not going to like my answer, Brian, but these things don't really affect relations in terms of the structural membranes within our relations with Russia. They don't affect the, you know, the fact that we sanctioned India for doing business with Russia. That doesn't affect our underlying relationship with India. These things are very, very solid relationships that are in each country's self-interest. And there's what you call, I would call it a cosmetic protest, where, you know, someone like a Modi or Putin says, how could you do that to us? We've been, you know, friends for so long. In Putin's case, we were allies in World War II. In Modi's case, I was just over to see you and you were so nice to me. But that's all cosmetic. The structural relationship is just the same as it's always been.
No, I like you. Whatever the answer is, I like. So whatever you think, that's why you're here. So, but for example, the one thing that didn't happen, they were afraid to have early meetings because it would have reinforced the whole collusion scenario. So if you want to establish, a lot of these presidents come in, they go, let me
Brian,
just establish.
Only with the New York Times. That's the only one who would have said collusion.
and the Washington Post and CBS and ABC and CNN and MSNBC.
Well, when I say the New York Times, I mean they and their subsidiaries.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Do you worry about they were being too tough with India?
No, I don't. I think a lot of signals have been sent to India that we need you to back off on the Russian energy deal. We need to be able to squeeze Russia. We have so many things going with India right now in terms of defense, in terms of intelligence. You know, there are a lot of, bridges between us and India right now that this is, again, this is cosmetic protest for internal consumption. Modi has no choice. He has to condemn what Trump did. But in terms of fundamentally kissing us off, not going to happen. Absolutely not.
All right, Ambassador. So I'll talk to you after Friday. My fingers are crossed so we make some progress here.
Sounds great, Brian. Nice to be with you.
Ambassador Gordon Sondland, always great. 1-866-408-7669. I'll be back with your calls if you want to do that, or you can write me at briankilmeade.com. Click on contacts.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When you listen to Jasmine Crockett or an AOC and the way they talk about them, even an Elizabeth Warren to a lesser degree or what have you, the Republicans are having a field day. They like, put them up on the screen. Let's show them. They plaster them all over the place, especially Mom Donnie. That's not an order today, just like you pointed. Why? Because they know that even though New York might go for him, the America won't.
Stephen A. Smith is 100% right. He knows what the president did last time in 2017. Why was he talking about the squad? Did he feel the squad was a threat? Or did he feel, oh, those were the outgoing faces of the Democratic Party? Even though maybe it was others that had a more moderate view, it doesn't matter. I mean, now they're much more extreme. But every time Jasmine Crockett talks, Republicans benefit. If Mandami wins in New York City, Republicans will benefit. There's just no doubt about it. And the other thing that blew me away over the week that I was missing is when I see people like Rahm Emanuel come forward and say, you know, got to be moderate. You know, you have Mayor Pete, who I don't believe, but he says he's got to realize some of the extreme positions of the pronouns and the DEI. They got to go. You know, America's not a horrible place. The whole men and women's sports got to stop. I thought James Carville would lead that charge, but instead, listen to what he said. Cut 46.
People are right when they say this democracy is really imperfect. And they're going to have to do, if the Democrats win the presidency, the Senate and the House in 2028, which is not impossible. I don't know if you say likely or possible. I don't know what word, you know, but it's certainly not impossible. They are just going to have to unilaterally add Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia states. They're going to have to, the Congress does give, the Constitution gives Congress power over federal elections. I don't think they can redistrict, but they're things they're going to do. They're going to have to do it. So, they're just going to have to do it. And they may have to expand the court to 13 members.
So what he's saying is that I would like to change the government if Democrats win. So Republicans win, they get the House, they get the Senate, and they get the presidency. Do you hear them trying to get rid of the filibuster? Do you see them trying to add two states or subtract? Do you see them, you know, half of Oregon wants to join Idaho? Do you see them doing that? That would make Idaho a more very strong Republican state. It would actually give Oregon, isolate them even further. So, I mean, they would get to additional House seats. Do you see them doing that? They're not doing that. They're getting upset that they're trying to gerrymander on an in-between 10-year cycles, which happens all the time over in Texas. And in case you missed it, a bunch of Democratic lawmakers left in order to stop the Republicans from having a quorum and to begin to redistrict Texas and make it more of a red state. But the problem is, when they go to retaliate, is California is already redistricted heavily. Maryland basically maxed out. Massachusetts has no seats, but they have Republicans, believe it or not. And in Illinois, they have done such gymnastics with the gerrymanders through the middle. I don't even see the map. Through the middle, it looks like a snake, and it runs north-south instead of east-west. It's the tiniest thing. It's like a mini Gaza Strip just to get one Democratic seat, more Democratic seat out of Illinois. So when they go to do this in Maryland and other places, even constitutionally they can do it, they're not going to get much out of it. So the Republicans will counter with, when I get more out of Florida, going to get more out of Missouri. And we'll see where they go from there. Maybe North Carolina. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, I'll be hosting Jesse tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in action now. It's going to be a busy week. Michael Goodwin is standing by of the New York Post. And we'll, of course, take your calls at 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on, and we'll have the breaking news. The other thing the president's going to be talking about this hour is he wants to make D.C. safe again and beautiful again. He wants these federal projects coming in under budget. And he wants the crime to stop in D.C. the best it can. He's put 120 FBI agents out. He's going to announce officially he's putting the National Guard into action. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My administration would be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. I will actually deliver in a manner where he is simply betrayed.
Really? Okay. Zoran Mamdani. How could he still be leading? New revelations. He lives in a rent-controlled apartment for the impoverished, yet he's wealthy. Can you say hypocrite? Socialist group? Anti-family? And now he says he promises to be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. Really? Helping New York City by making an enemy of the federal government? Is that who you want, New York?
Number two.
If they want to evade that arrest, they're going to have to stay outside of the state of Texas for literally years. And they might as well just start voting in California or voting in Illinois, wherever they may be. We are incapable of conducting business for the people of Texas because they have fled.
Well, there is Governor Abbott taking action. Gerrymandering madness continues this week as Texas lawmakers hold out without payment, thousands of miles from their home, while Dems queue up a response in blue states, and the Republicans say we'll do even more of this in red states.
Number one.
We have a shot at it. Look, it's got to be solved. You're losing thousands of people a week, Russians and Ukrainians mostly.
Yep. Deal in Ukraine. I love the summit with Putin in Alaska, but let's bring in Zelensky and get something done and end this three-year war. And by the way, if you ever want to get the podcast, if you can't listen to us live, just go to Fox News app and just click on podcast or wherever you get your podcast platform. Hey, Michael Goodwin, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian.
So are you optimistic about Friday? What's your biggest concern?
I think optimism is probably in short supply on this, because I think that there's no sign that Putin wants peace. He has made reportedly the demand that sort of the eastern part of Ukraine be part of a settlement and that it go to Russian control and ownership. If you're Zelensky, you cannot possibly agree to that, anything of that magnitude. You know, to be a realist, you know you've lost something, but such a big thing, I think, would lead to revolt in Ukraine as well, and it would also be seen as a reward for Putin. And so I think the president's in a tough spot. President Trump is in a tough spot because Putin is not willing to give, it seems. He wants a settlement that rewards what he did. That's a tough position for President Trump to be in.
So, Michael, he didn't need to do this. I mean, he must have given some type of door with Witkoff, unless he had the worst translator ever. And he could have had a summit at any time. So if he's not looking to get off, like do anything, it'd just be a very, I guess, inexperienced move for him to make. Somebody who doesn't know Trump at all, someone who doesn't know the downside of going to Alaska and not delivering anything. I'm wondering if there's something that he is willing to give. If a swap is going to be offered.
Well, that's a good point, Brian, that the president and Witkoff have put him on the line. I mean, he very much has always wanted to settle this. Remember, as a candidate, he said he could settle it in 24 hours. And in one conversation with him about it, what I took away from it was that they would just stop where they were, that there wouldn't be any more fighting, and in effect, Russia would have the land it had conquered. A lot of that land is now in dispute, and yet I think that Putin has shown no signs. I mean, he really had to be embarrassed merely to have this meeting, because he has said all along, there's basically nothing to talk about. We're going to keep fighting. And I don't know that that has changed. And so you're right. The president could be embarrassed if he comes away empty-handed, if Putin refuses to yield. And I don't think Zelensky can yield all of eastern Ukraine. So the president has put himself, his own reputation, on the line here.
All right, so let's talk about what's happening in New York. It's got the whole country talking about this socialist who promises to be Donald Trump's worst nightmare and has very few high-profile endorsers after the embarrassing Elizabeth Warren. Here's Governor Kathy Hochul about, you know, what's going on. She basically says, I'm not going to endorse him. We have too many disagreements, but I'll work with anyone. What's your take on this Democratic leadership?
Well, I think they're all afraid, not of Mamdani himself, but of his voters, that if that becomes the new energy of the Democratic Party and that they endorse that, then why those people are not going to endorse Chuck Schumer. They're not going to endorse Kathy Hochul or Hakeem Jeffries. They want their own leaders in there. They want, you know, they want the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders and the Jasmine Crockett's. Those are their people. Those are the people they want to run the Democratic Party. And so Hochul is up for re-election next year, and she has rejected Mamdani on the issue of taxes and that sort of thing, because she knows if she comes out for tax hikes, she'll likely lose re-election. So that's the problem they're all up against, is their own career is on the line. So are they going to give in to him and endorse him, or are they going to, you know, stay away right. from him and possibly see others win those offices? So far they've opted to try to keep him at arm's length. I don't know if that will continue, particularly because he is in many ways, in New York at least, he does represent the energy of the new Democratic Party. Well, and they cannot or they will not run against that energy in their own campaign.
It's crazy. But now you look at maybe Cuomo and maybe Eric Adams soon. I'm not sure what Eric Adams is doing these days because he's been way too quiet for a guy that wants to win. But he thinks he's got to take out Cuomo first. Cuomo at least is going after the many vulnerabilities of Mamdani. He's saying now he lives in a rent-stabilized apartment. You got to be kidding me. The guy's making over six figures. His parents are rich. His wife is rich. And he's living in a rent-stabilized apartment while vilifying rich people. Here's Andrew Cuomo, Cut 34.
I think rent-stabilized units, when they're vacant, should only be rented to people who need affordable housing. Not people like Zoran Mamdani, and I'm going to call it Zoran's Law because it's an abuse of the system, and it's a fraud, and New Yorkers have a sixth sense where they can detect a person who's a fraud, and that's what's going on here.
Is Cuomo, are you counting him out or no?
No. I have believed all along, Brian, that Cuomo, among the non-Mamdani candidates, Curtis Sliwa, Eric Adams, that Cuomo has the best chance of beating him. Don't forget, Cuomo stayed in the primary and got 44% of the vote. Eric Adams did not run in the primary because he knew he would finish last, probably, or well near the bottom. So he opted to skip the primary. He's a Democrat. Skip the primary, run as an independent. Cuomo had this independence line as an insurance policy if he lost the primary. So the polls have shown that Cuomo is still running first among the non-Mamdani candidates. And I believe he's probably the one with the best chance to defeat Mamdani. But for that to happen, all of the candidates are going to have to rally around him or someone else because it's a divided field. You really have Curtis Sliwa, Cuomo, and Eric Adams. So in a way, you could see all three of them as viable. But as of now, they're just dividing the anti-Mamdani vote. They've got to coalesce around one.
So now this big story in Texas, are these Democratic lawmakers going to come back so they can redistrict? Kathy Hochul is joining Gavin Newsom to say if they do that, we'll do it in New York. Cut 16.
Well, we went back and redrew the maps. We followed the process, and here we are. And we didn't intend to do this again until the 2032 elections. But because we're in a different situation altogether that demands that leaders stand up and say, I'm not going to let our democracy be eroded away because there's a blatant power grab to maintain power in our nation's capital. This is what I call a legal insurrection. Mm-hmm. Legal insurrection. Just let the rules stay the way they are. We'll do it the way we always have.
So Governor Kathy Hochul says, I'm going to go redistrict. Can she do that?
No, the state constitution prohibits it, and she has to know that. So I think this is, again, Brian, just kind of showing voters that she's going to fight Trump. That's all it is. It's talking tough, but there's no there. But this is something, it's a kind of performance art that Democrats have to do now across the country to resist Donald Trump, that they're playing to the anti-Trumpers in their own states, and it's a way of just demonstrating their independence and their fighting spirit, et cetera, et cetera. It's a little boring, I have to say. It's not very persuasive because in New York the law is so clear. The law in Texas is quite different. So to compare them, as she seems to be doing, to say that they're one and the same is simply not true. She has to know it's not true, but that's what you get when you get somebody who's only playing to the peanut gallery.
So you wrote about Netanyahu has no choice but to take over Gaza. You know who agrees with you? Congressman Josh Gottheimer, Cut 54.
Well, the prime minister made it very clear, as you played, that there is no intent for long-term occupation or annexation, which I think is the right answer. You need to make sure you crush Hamas, you get humanitarian aid in, and then you get a new governing structure in. The Arab League also put out a statement, a unprecedented one, in the last week, saying that Hamas needs to get out. They can't be the governing structure long term. We need to have a multinational Arab force. And I believe in the end of these negotiations, that's what you'll have, a long term peacekeeping force and a new governing structure there. You cannot allow Hamas, which doesn't care at all about innocent Palestinian people, to be in control.
So your thoughts, I mean, the Netanyahu says that we neutralized Iran. We have Lebanon now voting to disarm Hezbollah, which is about to happen. And the perpetrators of this whole war from October 7th are still holding on, while holding on to 20-plus hostages.
Well, and one of the reasons they're holding on, Brian, is that there is significant support or criticism of Israel. So when you talk about the leaders of the UK, Canada, and France advocating for a Palestinian state, along with many others at the United Nations, as I understand it, when the three of those leaders came out for a Palestinian state, that's when Hamas called off the negotiations for a ceasefire, that President Trump was very optimistic were going to bear fruit. So the fact that the Hamas is listening to the world debate a Palestinian state, it is, as President Trump said, rewarding Hamas. And that's exactly how Hamas understands it, too. So I do think that what Netanyahu has done, is talking about doing, is the only way to change the calculation that Hamas is making, that all it has to do is wait and the world will come to its rescue and grant it a Palestinian state and it will be in charge. So it will be rewarded for October 7th. The difficulty is, even as you say, Arab League troops or whatever keeping the peace after Hamas, let's say, surrenders, who actually runs Gaza? And the Israelis do not want the Palestinian Authority, which is the governing entity in the West Bank, because it's so corrupt and so weak. And very much in what it teaches children in schools is very much, you know, the kill the Jews kind of dogma that Hamas also favors. So the Palestinian Authority is not the answer to the question as to who will govern Gaza after Hamas is defeated. And that's why I think Netanyahu wants to be there so that the Israelis can help shape that governing entity and not just turn it over to another jihadist.
I hear you. It's going to be interesting because there is a Hail Mary by Qatar and Egypt. I wonder if they're going to put the screws to Hamas leadership who is in Qatar.
It's about time.
I know. Michael, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Read the New York Post, 1-866-408-7669. A few more minutes, and then we'll have the whole half back hour for your interaction. Don't move.
giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Every major group that grades the fairness of congressional maps gives your state an F. Common Cause, a nonpartisan government watchdog, even says your map, and I'm going to quote, represents a nearly perfect model for everything that can go wrong with redistricting. And I guess the question is, you talk about preserving democracy. How do you preserve democracy if you're using the same tactics that you've criticized Texas Republicans for?
But as I say, what they're talking about is a distraction. The reality is that the violation of people's voting rights is what Texas is attempting to do. That's what's wrong with their efforts right now. And the fact that the president of the United States knows it and nevertheless is asking them to do it. That is what's wrong with what we're seeing right now. Democracy is at stake.
He is a clown. And for him to think he's going to run for president is nuts. He just got a direct question from Kristen Welker. If he wasn't ready for that question, because if you look at the map of Illinois, what happens is you can redistrict and you could try to maximize as many Republicans or Democrats as you can. So governor takes over, legislature takes over, they redistrict usually when the census comes out. And Illinois has just made the whole, bastardized the whole process. Massachusetts, just zero. There's no Republicans at all. Maryland, very close. And he says it's a distraction. No, it's not a distraction. What Illinois has done was an abomination when it comes to gerrymandering. Now, if you think there's no problem with it, then you have no problem with Texas. You can't have both of it. But to say it's a distraction to bring up your own state when you're the governor of that state, that's an insult. So we'll bring up some of that. It's going to be pretty dramatic. I mean, I hope it doesn't come down to people getting arrested, a part-time lawmaker. But something's got to happen. I mean, Governor Abbott's going to keep them in session. So go ahead. Live your life in Illinois and in California. But your part-time legislatures, for the most part, you have other jobs, let alone kids in camp and vacations planned, and you want to stay in a Holiday Inn?
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But why are you going on these ICE raids? I don't understand that. You're a guy who we know for so many years who has been working to put families together, to bring families who are apart and heal them. And now you're going on raids with people who are literally separating families. Explain
well, now
that to
that's
me.
They're
not separating families?
No. If you arrest somebody that's a citizen that has committed a crime or is DUI with the child in the back seat, do you think they don't separate that family right then, right there?
But that's not what's going on.
Of course they do.
So he goes on the ICE raids. He sees these guys. He gets to know the ICE people and the agents. And by the way, there's about 10,000 spots open. They have 100,000 applications. So this whole push of recruiting is working. So Dr. Phil, who's been going on these raids, I don't think his network's doing too well, but he was going on these raids with these ICE agents. He's tight with President Trump. And he's seeing a lot of these bad guys being picked up. Plus, when you break the law and you come over here, you should be susceptible to being sent back home. That's the way it is. And it seems like Democrats are trying to find a family or a soccer player that's get picked up and or the father is sent home because the kids are citizens. And I just love the way Dr. Phil, doesn't surprise me, he's a very self-assured guy, is pushing back. But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, and they're trying to wear down President Trump's huge advantage on immigration by saying you're sending home families and short order cooks. And Peggy Noonan has this column in the Wall Street Journal last week saying that the people in my neighborhood make up the fabric of my community, and some here are without documentation. Yeah, some here, because they have those jobs, are keeping other people from getting those jobs that are American citizens, and perhaps they're hired at a lower rate. Do you understand you can't just say, well, that's not a real problem, but this is a real problem? Do I think that for farmers and hospitality workers, something could be coming down the line? Yeah. It's very complicated. But the first thing I have to do is secure the border. You can't have it both ways. The minute things are getting a little rough, then people get upset. Go to a Home Depot because they find out that a bunch of illegal immigrants, many of which are criminals, are at a Home Depot. Nothing against Home Depot. You're not going for Hispanic people, but it just turns out that mostly Hispanics are waiting for work. Maybe not enough Germans and Asians. I'm not sure why, but it's not because they're targeting Hispanics. But I love that people are coming to join ICE, and they're responding, not worried about what people are saying about them. They know they're doing the right thing. ICE agents arrested over the weekend in Rhode Island, a Guatemalan illegal alien, because Rhode Island is a sanctuary city and they don't cooperate. So ICE agents said, this guy's a rapist and you're about to let him out. So he goes to court, he gets let out, and ICE arrests him right on the doorstep of the courts. And they pulled this criminal, this rapist, who was probably going to go rape again and commit another crime, right out, and they arrest him. And ICE tripled down. They said, yeah. I had to pick him up on our own. Todd Lyons said we needed 5 agents to make the arrest instead of 1 because local cops are not cooperating. He says if ICE agents weren't available to take that individual into custody, they would have, quote, had another child sex offender go back into the community into Rhode Island. I love this, too. Donald Trump's wall materials that were sold by Joe Biden may soon find their way back to us. The global government surplus action house that listed unused components of President Trump's wall under the Biden administration, they have been contacted, said they plan to coordinate with the Trump administration, return some of the materials to the federal government. Good. That'll save us additional money. I love it. I love what Dean Cain did. He said, I'm going to join ICE. I want to show everybody, because he is a sheriff and he's going through the police training. And he said this about joining ICE, Cut 56.
This is the kind of thing where people have to step up. I'm stepping up. Hopefully a whole bunch of other former officers, former ICE agents will step up and we'll meet those recruitment goals immediately and we'll help protect this country. It's the reason I became a police officer during that time when everyone was trying to defund the police. That's when I stepped up and joined because it makes no sense to me. It's totally insane. And this country was built on patriots stepping up, whether it was popular or not, and doing the right thing. I truly believe this is the right thing.
Of course, in California, too. Now he moved to Las Vegas. Dean Cain will be sworn in as an honorary customs enforcement officer. Cool. Sandra over in West New York. Hey, Sandra.
Yes. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Great.
I wanted to say you brought up something that was on my mind, that Donald Trump wishes and will clean up Washington, D.C. very soon, because knowing him, it's going to be
done. He's doing today, starting today.
There you go. Now, I have to say something. I went to see the show Hamilton about 2 weeks ago, and I had the pleasure of sitting next to a young girl from China. So she didn't speak English very much, but she did make her point. I asked her, well, what do you think of New York City? She goes, well, I don't like seeing all these people sleeping in the street. And then she shyly said, and it's also very, very dirty. Now, look, Brian, I was embarrassed. Even though I'm in New Jersey, I have family in the city. That's my second home. Donald Trump is embarrassed also. And think of all the people that come to visit the White House. They have to see this. So God bless him to do this.
Yeah.
And maybe after he does it, others will follow.
Yeah, that's Mayor Bowser and Trump are working together. Mayor Bowser says it's always the president's prerogative to use federal law enforcement on the National Guard. But she said multiple times that she thinks crimes is going down. I guess she wasn't part of the carjacking that took out Big Balls last week when he got beat up by a bunch of teens. The problem is these teenagers, you don't prosecute them because they're juveniles. They got to change that rule. Over in the Navy Yard neighborhood, which is very nice, there was an issue. There was a shooting there the other day. That seems to be a huge problem. Carjacking, it's a huge problem. And now he also thinks beautification should be part of it. He said, I'm tired of these cost overruns with these federal buildings, like the Fed, which is spending $3.1 billion to fix up a building, which he says he could do for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, by the way, they always miss their deadlines. So here is Bob in Connecticut. Hey, Bob, the other big story is what's happening Friday in Alaska.
Hey, Brian. Great show.
Thank you.
I was calling. I'm a Republican from Connecticut with no representation. And I was calling regarding the Russian-Ukraine war. And Russia has set a precedent by allowing North Korean soldiers to fight with the Russians against Ukraine. And Ukraine's allies must
allow volunteers from their countries to fight alongside the Ukrainians and drive Russia from all of Ukraine. You cannot win a defensive war. You must go on the offensive, using all weapons at your disposal to win and protect your people. So I think it's you have access to the president. So I thought it was time that perhaps somebody presented it to him that Russia has already set the precedent by allowing
that would be pretty
North
funny,
Korean
Bob. Hey,
fight.
You can take North Korea. I'll take South Korean troops. We'll create a little peninsula problem right there in Central Europe. I hear what you're saying, but I think that, you know, I love that the Europeans are stepping up and they say, we'll put troops in there. We'll be the tripwire. I love it. I love that we got two more powers, Finland and Norway, and Sweden, rather, in that region. I love it. I don't know if you heard Ambassador Gordon Sondland earlier today. He says, if you look at the armed forces of just Sweden and Finland, and you factor in one other European country, they're more powerful. They'll crush Russia. Russia has been shown they can make adjustments in the battlefield by stealing the patent of Iran and making drones. But when it comes to fighting, they just like throwing people into a meat grinder and begging prisoners to put on a uniform so they could die in the battlefield rather than hang themselves in a cell. So that's Russia for you. Thanks so much, Bob. I'm not sure the Korean thing works, but I like you thinking out of the box. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm announcing a historic action to rescue our nation's capital from crime, bloodshed, bedlam, and squalor, and worse. This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back. We're taking it back under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States. I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is? And placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control, and you'll be meeting the people that will be directly involved with that.
I love it. And that's what the president's saying. I don't think it's okay that the city's out of control. It's not okay. You shrug your shoulders if you're a Democrat. Ignore it. If you're a Republican, well, I'm not in control. It's my party's not in control of those cities. Let them fall on their own weight. He's not into that. He's 4 years and done. And he's, you know, he put in national troops until I think it was Portland, got huge, huge blowback on that, ended up pulling back to a degree. They were the targets for a while. Now he's like, forget it. You saw what happened in California. That's a lesson in Los Angeles. You let your city get out of control. Not only are we coming in with National Guard, we're coming in with Marines. And now he's saying the FBI, 120 have fanned out. Now he's going to say National Guard. Pete Hegseth is standing over his right shoulder, Pambani over his left shoulder. So they're going into D.C. and saying when people come to the Capitol, which is an unbelievable summer vacation, if you're the family, you don't have to go more than 2 square miles. You go in the Smithsonian, you go take a White House tour, go through the House of Representatives. I mean, it's like a year of schooling, of social studies and history for kids and family. And it's cool. I mean, it's not schoolwork. And now you go have to worry about, well, you know, I could get carjacked. I don't know if I should rent a car. You know, some of these homeless people are dangerous. Why is it I get out of the train station and I see these encampments and I'm watching these people shoot up? President Trump's like, no, I'm not doing that. Well, there's a Democratic mayor. I don't care. Call her. Tell her we're doing this. Well, crime is down. Really? He just ran over 6 or 7 different examples of people being shot and killed and beat up senseless. And this guy from Doge, his nickname is Big Balls. Everyone has fun with it. But he got beaten to he's got nose broken. You got to see a picture of this kid. He got beat senseless by like 7 or 8 guys who are 16 and 17 years old. And the ones that get caught are out because of charges of juveniles. That's got to change as well, don't you think? So the president's doing that. He announced it yesterday. And he's also announced a beautification situation where he's trying to get everything looking great again. You know, they did something on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, which he's never on. Should not be named after the guy. Never does a show. But They had Jonathan Carl on yesterday, and they just looked at the White House from the first term to the beginning of the second term. And each time you see the Oval Office or a different room, it looks better and better. And it's the Trump touch, which is gold. And he's putting it everywhere. He's dressing it up. He's walking the roof of the White House. Why? He's like, I want to be able to utilize this to make it better. Not for him for 2 years. He's got great places. And now he's building a huge veranda where they're going to have these state house dinners. They're going to have 650 people be able to go and go to these dinners, whether it's the Japanese president or prime minister or the Chinese president. I mean, they're going to be able to come here, and that's going to be generations. I think the president wants a long-term touch. That's why he wants the beautification. So he talked about yesterday in his Truth Social post. He says, I'm going to be looking to end crime in D.C., murder and death in the nation's capital, but also be talking about cleanliness and general physical renovation and condition of D.C. I think it's pretty cool. He says, we're not going to allow people to spend $3.1 billion on fixing up a building like the Federal Reserve that could have been done for $50 or $100 million. And he knows it. He knows what it's like just to push people to do things quicker and to do things better. And now the National Guard is going to be used. National Guard, the military has been unbelievably effective as a deterrent in Los Angeles and at the border has been phenomenal. So I'm loving what he's doing. Also, yesterday I was off, but on Friday, I think it was, he says, we're going after the cartels. Too many people are dying from the illegal drug use. Too many people are profiting from it in Mexico. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's communication with the Mexican president, which is part of the reason why the tariffs were postponed for, 90 days? You don't do that unless behind the scenes, the president's going, look, I can only have so much control of my country. I don't have the firepower of the cartels. They're using the drug money they sell to you guys, and they're getting more and more powerful. So how do we stop that? Number one, we enforce the border. Number two, we make things more difficult, every sense of the word. And then we start putting pressure on them directly. And that's what he seems to be doing. And I'm loving that he's doing this on all levels. And then he says, oh, by the way, $50 million to take out Maduro of Venezuela. He only got 30% of the vote. 70% went to the opposition leader. He stayed in power again. So he laughed in Joe Biden's face. Remember the deal? Allow Chevron to get their feet underneath them again. Let them start drilling again. Let the profits start coming in again. And in exchange, just have free and fair elections. Maduro says, you got it. And he has elections. They're not free. They're not fair. He loses, but he stays in power. So Trump comes in and goes, okay, gave you a shot. We tried to get elections. You're not going to have elections. So $50 million, you deliver Maduro. So good luck with that. And the big story is president does not want to lose the midterms. So he's going, looking around, going, okay, how do we get these House seats? It's going to be decided by 5 or 6 House seats. Why does Texas, who has 56% of the vote, have so many Democratic districts? So he took a look at it. And he decides, hey, you know what? Let's start exploring there. He does it. The D.C. Does not want to. D.C. doesn't want to knuckle under to this. The Democrats don't. So they leave and they go to Illinois for the most part. They're invited. Over to California. California says they're going to have a special referendum to see if they can make their state more Democratic friendly, if they could redistrict to that point. Here's Karl Rove on what Texas is really doing as opposed to what you're hearing they're doing. And by the way, he doesn't just go and back everything Trump says. Understand? I think we understand that. Cut 21.
Well, it is bad for them because back here in Texas, they're seen as not doing their job, and they're saying things that are simply not true. Take the Democrat spokesman you had on the CNN program. The redistricting plan that has been proposed in the House of Representatives, Texas House, creates 2 black majority districts for the first time in the history of Texas and creates an 8th Hispanic majority population district. So the idea that this is on the backs of blacks and browns is ridiculous. It's just the opposite. For the first time ever, Texas would have a compact, contiguous district in Dallas that is majority black and a similar district in Houston that's majority black.
There you go. And Mark Wayne Mullen says, listen, if the Democrats want to respond, they will lose. He says they have very few options. And I think he's 100% correct on that. So here's Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, cut 25.
By the way, if you redraw red states, they're also going to pick up seats for Republicans. They're going to lose Democrat seats because they've been holding on to this court by race-based drawing districts, and that's no longer acceptable according to the courts. So this is actually great news for Republicans. It's horrible for Democrats.
That's what he thinks. And Mark Wayne Mullen said that to me last night from Oklahoma, where they were sent home, because it's their break. They tried to squeeze some more nominations, but the Democrats will not have any voice vote where they could just get dozens and dozens of people passed. Why would you do it on a voice vote? Because it's not controversial. It's the president's deputy, there's undersecretaries, ambassadors. There's no controversial appointment. You know, I guess you could say that Pete Hegseth was unconventional, needed, I think, J.D. Vance to pull him through. There's none of that. All they're trying to do is slow Trump down. They have 144 nominees, including Mike Waltz, sitting on the sideline right now, and they went home. When they come back, they're going to come with a nuclear option. I'll explain that in a different hour. President of the United States having his press conference, too, where he's talking about saving the Capitol. Pretty cool. He's always in motion. And don't forget, on the 23rd, in Dallas, Texas, streamed on Fox Nation, History, Liberty, and Laughs, BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, and we're moving along on this Monday, back in action today. Mark Caden's going to be with us, the CEO of the Trade Association, representing over 10,000 financial planners across the country. We've got to find out the state of our economy by the people who are dealing with everyday Americans. Mark will be with us in 34 minutes. Governor Chris Christie is standing by, and we're seeing a press conference continue as the President of the United States is going to do two things. He wants to clean up D.C. physically, clean up the parks, clean up the buildings, get these cost overruns into shape, and crack down on crime. And he's got the FBI, he's got Pam Bondi, he's got the Secretary of Defense, National Guard is going to be implemented. He ran off some horrendous situations of criminal activity, including the assault of a 19-year-old Doge worker, volunteering, by the way. So before we get to Governor Christie, big three.
Number three.
My administration would be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. I will actually deliver in a manner where he is simply betrayed.
Yeah, how could he still be leading? Zohran Mamdani found out to be living in a rent-controlled apartment traditionally given to people who are financially disadvantaged. This guy is wealthy. What a hypocrite. He belongs to an organization, socialist, who want to take apart the family, and now he wants to go to war with the federal government with Donald Trump. How does that benefit a city?
Number two.
If they want to evade that arrest, they're going to have to stay outside of the state of Texas for literally years. And they might as well just start voting in California or voting in Illinois, wherever they may be. We are incapable of conducting business for the people of Texas because they have fled.
Yep, that is Governor Greg Abbott. Gerrymandering madness continues this week as Texas lawmakers hold out without payment thousands of miles away from home while Dems queue up a response in blue states. A move few on the right fear any reprisals from the move to get more GOP districts in Texas. They're doing that. They're going to go for Florida and Indiana right after that. I'll tell you why.
Number one.
We have a shot at it. Look, it's got to be solved. You're losing thousands of people a week, Russians and Ukrainians mostly.
That's the President of the United States announcing there's going to be a summit in Alaska. A deal in Ukraine. I love the idea of meeting with Vladimir Putin, but I have no faith in Vladimir Putin. I hope Zelensky finds his way, even if it's in an adjoining room, so we could get something done and we don't have pledges and promises, because this is a war that's going on way too long. And it's stunning, I think, the Russians. They thought they'd have a two-week jaunt. In fact, Joe Biden was sure of it, and it's not. I'll tell you what, Ukraine is becoming, pound for pound, the best army in Europe, but they're paying a huge price. Governor Chris Christie joins us now. Governor, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Good to talk to you.
Well, I promise one thing. I will not bring up New York baseball.
Please don't.
I have never seen, and you're a member of the Mets board, I've never seen two teams crater like these two teams have cratered.
It's incredible. It's hard to watch. I'm so glad that we have an off day for the Mets today. We can't lose tonight, and I need a day off.
I know, absolutely. So, Governor, let's talk about the race for the governor's mansion that you once ran. Jack Cittarelli got so close last time. What about this time?
Look, I think Jack has a real chance to win this race. People are tired after 8 years of the Murphy administration, the rising taxes. You know, Brian, state spending in New Jersey has gone from $34 billion in my last budget to now $58 billion in 8 years. It's incredible. Quality of life has not improved. In fact, it's gotten worse. And so I think Jack has a legitimate shot to win this thing in a year when people in New Jersey, I think, are growing very tired of one-party rule in the state.
What's the budget if you're spending that much? Do you have any idea what the revenue is?
Oh, well, look, right now they have a technically balanced budget. But the problem is that they're still spending some of that COVID money and some of the other federal money that Joe Biden was doling out. The next governor is going to have a real, real crisis on their hands, Brian, when it comes to the budget.
Couple more New Jersey questions. Number one, you put out on Twitter that you guys were working natural gas to the point where you are basically an energy independent state. What's happened since Murphy took over?
Well, since Phil Murphy took over, just as I was leaving, there were two more new gas plants getting ready to go online in New Jersey. He canceled them, and he closed four other ones. And his whole dream was to, as you know, be, doing just renewable energy, which makes absolutely no sense at all to be relying solely on that. It's certainly not in a state as large and densely populated as New Jersey, really any place in America for that matter. Fact is that we went in 2016, Brian, for the first time ever, New Jersey was completely energy independent. We produced all of our own energy inside the state. In 2017, my last year as governor, we became an energy exporter to other states. We were exporting electricity to other states that was generated in New Jersey. What's happened since then? 40% increase, 40% in people's utility bills. It is an outrage. It was all because of Phil Murphy and his energy master plan, and it has really cost New Jerseyans. And to be honest, Brian, even if Jack Cittarelli won in January or was sworn in January, he would take another 2 years to get a new gas plant online because of the supply chain issues in getting those things up and running. So New Jerseyans are faced now with probably another 3 years minimum increasing utility bills.
So this is pretty crazy. But do you think in a positive way, Governor Christie, that people are waking up and breaking the green fever dream? And now that we have AI totally. That needs so much more energy, and natural gas, we all know, burns clean. So we all know that was a folly to begin with. So do you think there's a change now that some clear-thinking Democrats will understand that dog won't hunt anymore?
You know, I hope so. And if they don't, I think the voters are going to make them understand by showing them the door. You know, in any place around the country, but especially in a place like New Jersey, which has extremes in terms of weather, really warm summers, really cold winters, you know, your utility bills are, in New Jersey, other than your property taxes, your biggest expense in running a household. And these bills going up 40% in Phil Murphy's 8 years. So I hope that the fever is breaking. I could say this in New Jersey. People are starting to notice it. They're not happy about it. And they realize that it was an unforced error, Brian. This did not need to happen. We were an energy exporter. When I left office in January of 2018, we created more electricity in New Jersey than we needed. Now we are significantly an energy importer.
So let's talk about crime and punishment. The president's having a press conference still going on. He's had it with happening in D.C. He's cracking down on the homeless situation, the encampments. He says a dirty city. I see it. It's getting slightly better. I was at I was at Union Station about 2 weeks ago. I thought there was some improvements, but after the assault of one of his workers, one of his volunteers with Doge, he's had it. How do you feel about the crackdown using National Guard, FBI, and others?
Well, look, it's a federal city, Brian, and I think the president is taking responsibility for what he needs to take responsibility for and what Joe Biden didn't take responsibility for. And no excuse for our nation's capital to be a crime-ridden place. And unsafe. You know, we have people from all over the world who want to come to Washington, D.C.
I know.
To see the seat of the greatest democracy. And when they walk around the city, we should be embarrassed. So I'm glad the president's doing what he's doing. I hope he does it well, because if he does it well, everybody who lives in Washington and everybody who visits Washington are going to benefit by it.
Something else has changed since you ran for office is the Democratic Party has gone way left. Not my opinion. It's a fact, and it's a fear for Democrats. Zohra Mamdani winning going away in that primary against Cuomo and now opening up the lead since, despite his outward socialist views, his anti-Semitism beliefs, his anti-family beliefs, living in a rent-subsidized apartment, even though he's rich and his wife is loaded, his parents are loaded, yet he's against billionaires, and now he wants to declare war on Trump. Listen to this, cut 30.
My administration would be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. And you don't need to take me at my word or take Andrew Cuomo at his. You need only look at the actions of the Trump administration since I won the Democratic primary. How else can you describe a president who has proposed denaturalizing the Democratic nominee of New York City? How else can you describe a president who has sought to entertain suggestions of deporting me, of arresting me, of taking control of the city over the will of New Yorkers? Those are the actions of a president who is afraid of the fact that I will actually deliver in a manner where he is simply betrayed.
You think this guy's going to deliver?
It's laughable. This is a 33-year-old spoiled brat who has never run a thing in his life, and you're now going to turn over $113 billion city budget to this guy? The people of New York City have to be insane. From a management perspective alone, this guy is grossly unqualified to run a corner grocery store, let alone the biggest city in the United States. And this, you know, I'm not going to refer to him, Brian, publicly anymore other than as rent control Zohran. You know, he is a disgrace to have the money he has and to be talking about affordability in New York, and he has a rent control apartment, an apartment that could be used by someone who actually needs that rent control to be able to help them to put a roof over their family's head. This is not a leader. This is a spoiled brat who needs to be defeated.
So how do you explain that Governor Cuomo would let this guy close a 20-point lead, and now he's going to be a long shot to win? Now, is it because of Cuomo's past, the way he left office, or is it because the way he ran?
Look, I think that it was probably a bit of both, Brian. Andrew's resignation from the governorship obviously left a bad taste in some people's mouths in the state of New York. And secondly, he did not run the most aggressive campaign against Zohran. I think he believed the polls and didn't run the most aggressive campaign he could have. Let's also remember, too, Zohran Mamdani, I have to give him credit for this. He turned out a lot of new voters.
Yeah.
Who had never voted in New York City before and got a lot more votes than anybody thought he was going to get, not from people who had voted in the past, but people who had never voted before. And so those three things, I think, were the biggest contribution to it. But I think now Jim Walden, Andrew Cuomo, Eric Adams, and Curtis Sliwa need to get in a room and figure out who is the best person to defeat Mamdani. Because if they all stay in the race, Mamdani will win going away.
So ABC is where you work now, one of the places. And Terry Moran used to work there. He got fired after he went after Stephen Miller on Twitter. But he said this: they, in an effort to be diverse, they got Hispanics and blacks and more women, all these things. but they said there's one way ABC did not change and did not diversify. It's no secret. There are hardly any people who supported Trump at ABC or other corporate legacy mainstream news networks. And this is bound to impact coverage, not so much of the malevolent bias, but more out of what a kind of deafness. The old news divisions don't hear many of the voices of the country because those voices aren't in the newsroom. You are in the newsroom, Governor. What's the truth?
Look, I don't think that Terry is wrong. I think that everybody has known this, and I knew this when I was a public office holder, that most of the mainstream media, the people who covered us day to day, were liberal, had a liberal point of view, and that there's no question that it affected coverage, not only where I work at ABC, but everywhere else. And I think that's why they try to have people like me and Reince Priebus on there, who are the two main Republicans on ABC, to try to bring some conservative point of view there. And I think, you know, the rest of the networks are really no different, Brian, other than the one that you work for. They're no different. And you could say that. You could say what Terry said about ABC, about every other network other than Fox.
Very interesting. You know, the whole thing is, too, is a lot of times instead of saying I don't agree with Republicans or a conservative, sometimes I've never heard it before. Like I spend Sundays DVR and going through it. I watch everything. I watch you every week. I have no interest in getting confirmation of my opinion. I want to find out what everyone's thinking. It makes this show better. You know, I bring in sound bites that are contradictory, complimentary, whatever it is. But it seems to be a lot of times they have no idea what we're doing here. And I think it's with the late night shows, too.
Well, listen, there's no doubt that you can see what's happened with the late night shows. This is not Johnny Carson's late night. It's not even David Letterman and Jay Leno's late night. You know, the next iteration of this is why it's failing. People don't want to just hear one point of view. Quite frankly, late at night, people really don't want to hear too much about politics. What they want to hear, they want to be entertained. And if they do hear about politics, they want to hear jokes about both sides.
I know.
Listen, Brian, you and I know there's plenty of joke about both sides.
Yep.
You shouldn't have a problem finding jokes about Republicans and Democrats. But for some reason, these late night hosts only find jokes about Republicans.
They're not going for laughs. They're going for claps. And lastly, Governor, what's next for you? Have you thought about, I mean, are you glad you're out of politics right now on and being a commentator? Do you want to get back in? You could run again for New Jersey governor.
I could, and look, I hope that I don't have find any need to have to do that. I hope that we elect a Republican this year so that, you know, we can get our state back on the right track. But I never say I'm ready to retire, Brian. I think there's too many important issues, both in my state and in the country, for us to deal with, that we need people who are serious about making this country a smart, conservative place that leads the world. And, you know, you mentioned on the run-up here that, you know, President Trump going to meet with President Putin. You know, Brian, I went to Ukraine in the fall of 2023, and anybody who spends any time there will tell you that these are extraordinarily brave, good people who need to be supported. So I hope that what President Trump does is go there and tell Vladimir Putin it is time for him to end this war and time for him to stop his aggression against the Ukrainians. And so I think about all those things on a regular basis, so I'll never say I'm ready to retire. Right. And I'm only 62, Brian, so still hopefully got a lot of years ahead of me.
No, I know. No kidding. I just didn't know if it was going to be in politics or maybe hosting your show in the media. And I, by the way, I'm fully in support of Ukraine. I think you know that. Chris Christie, always great to have you on. Thank you, sir.
Brian, thanks so much for having me. You have a great week.
You too. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm just watching the president's press conference, which, hey, he's got a message to say, right? It's great. And then after the message, he goes and gives a press conference and answers every single question you want. Now, he's talking about crime in other cities. Is he going to do in D.C.? He's doing it in D.C., the National Guard, the FBI, fanning out all over. And they got to be tactics in coordination with the cops. Are they going to do it in other cities? And he said, yeah. Well, you could do it with us, or I could do it in, you know, without you. So I think Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, all these places, he's going to try to clean it up. Keep in mind, he's four and done. He's not going to wait.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 1-866-408-7669. About 15 minutes, I can open up the phones. But right now, we're watching the President of the United States just talk about everything. We're going to get so spoiled. I don't know who the next president's going to be, but it's hard to imagine another president this accessible. He just sits there with seven of his most important people behind him and takes every question under the sun. But one of the key questions is about the economy. And today, by the way, is the deadline for the framework to be signed off on to avoid tariffs with China. He seems optimistic they're going to get something done. Well, joining us now is Mark Caden, because as we talk about the macro economy, most of you are thinking about your own bank accounts. And something's been done in the big, beautiful bill. It's not getting enough attention. And let's bring in Mark Caden to talk about it, CEO of Fonseca, a trade association representing over 10,000 financial planners across the country. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So, Mark, in this bill and some of the proposals being knocked around, is the President of the United States is thinking about, with Scott Bessent, giving people a little control of their 401ks. How will that affect the average household?
Well, he's done a couple of really interesting things. In 401ks, he's opened up the investment options for alternative investments, which are usually just reserved for the ultra wealthy. So that's an exciting development that just happened. But you know, Brian, the other thing that I really love that he's done is in the One Big Beautiful Bill, he has these new Trump accounts. So, you know, we all know that we need to get more Americans saving, saving earlier, saving in the right ways. And people just sort of talk about it. They talk and talk and talk. Well, the president and the Congress have done more than just talk. They've created new accounts, and they're actually going to seed some dollars into those accounts for every child born after January 1st. So it's these Trump accounts, I think, are really exciting.
So how long will that go on for?
So it's a pilot program. It's going to go starting January 1, 2026, and it's going to go through 2029. So they're going to sort of see and experiment and how it happens. But what's cool is the fact that the $1,000, you think about the miracle of compound interest. I loved your opening, because most people sort of think about, okay, what does all this mean for me? The miracle of compound interest, $1,000, and it's going to get basically locked up for 18 years. That can mean real money when somebody turns 18. And if they hold it into their 50s and 60s, it could be $500,000 of savings just through the benefit of compound interest. So it sort of unlocks the market and gets people more access to savings and participating in the market in a way I think that's going to be, over time, transformational. So it's only a 3-4 year pilot program to start, but I think it's going to take root. And hopefully this is something that is built on in future Congresses.
So going back to the 401k, how will it help to be able to directly manage your money? And is that open up more opportunity for financial planners?
Yeah, well, there's no question. A 401k, the qualified plan savings accounts, it is one of the largest sources of financial savings in this country. Trillions of dollars literally are saved in qualified plans. And what, I mean, it is their own money. People are deferring their money. They get matched by their employer. But the exciting new development that the president has done is open up the available investment options. And some of these alternative investments, which has been only reserved for people at the ultra high net worth or super rich, these access to these investments are going to help them increase the returns they get on their savings. And then you couple that with financial plans and getting more people access to a financial plan through somebody who really knows what they're doing. You know, it's just going to mean more savings for people that they can rely on in retirement.
Right. I think that would certainly help. The other thing we're finding out with Gen Zers is that, in particular, very few even know what their credit score is. They don't even know the effort. They don't even know the metrics that go into it to begin with. A lot has to do, I understand, because people don't necessarily need credit cards now. You got Venmo and Zelle and other things. But do you find that concerning? Because I was, as an early age, people said the credit score is everything. Don't be late on a payment. Don't be late if you get a car loan. Don't be late because it's going to be hard for you to get a house. Now it seems as a generation almost oblivious to it.
You're exactly right, Brian. And I am very concerned about it. It's one of the reasons why I love Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary's emphasis on financial literacy. Because I think about, we have four kids. I think about, our oldest, has a different relationship with credit and credit scores. And what does it actually mean? It sort of seems opaque. And that's something that maybe adults are going to worry about. And I'm not quite yet an adult. And I think that's happening with kids literally across the country, and it's got real long-term implications. So I am excited the fact that more and more states are requiring financial literacy to graduate high school, but we have to do more. There's just no question about it. We got to create incentives for people to develop financial plans and so that they understand what a credit score means and how important it is to your financial future.
So people, if the average person, along with your financial future and wonder about planning and how much money do you have in your account, can I retire? I get it. But the average person is more caught up in the day-to-day. I mean, isn't the number 6 out of every 10 people live paycheck to paycheck? And if that is indeed the case, they really feel the groceries. Where, in practical terms, where is the inflation number for people you deal with, talk to?
Yeah, I mean, inflation, it's come down a bit since the president took office, but it's still real. And people feel that in grocery stores. Thankfully, eggs have come down, the price of eggs, but it's still real. And the amount of disposable income has really put pressure on the wallet. I do think that as a general matter, people feel good about where this country is going. I think the economic growth numbers in the second quarter feels good. And it's, it seems like it's a esoteric 3% GDP growth. But what that translates into is opportunity. It translates into more opportunity, more competitiveness. And that's really what we need. We need a vibrant and growing economy that everybody participates in. I think some of the tariffs and some of those dynamics, it's definitely created some uncertainty. But I think the long-term goal is to bring more domestic manufacturing here to the United States. So overall, I think people feel good, but there's more work to be done for sure.
So on the tariffs, we don't really know where they're going to land. We're getting an idea. Senator Rand Paul is very skeptical about the whole thing. Cut 63.
When we started putting a 50% tariff on aluminum and steel, it actually began back in 2018. The first time the first Trump administration did it, Europe put on tariffs, so did Canada, and bourbon sales plummeted. In fact, all U.S. spirits plummeted. And then finally there was an agreement made, and then the sales came back up. But no, this is an ongoing problem. Our farmers are suffering as well. Our farmers have had retaliatory tariffs, some of them going back to 2018 and 2019. And what we do is we simply give them direct subsidies. So the Trump administration has facilitated direct subsidies to the farmers to keep them quiet about the punishment of tariffs. So ultimately, you're going to hear from people.
Yeah. So he's down on the tariffs. How does this play out for the average American family?
Well, look, I think you got to look at the fact that, the president has cut a bunch of really good trade deals, right? There was a lot of uncertainty in the market. You go back 3, 4, 5 months, where the stock market was down 1,300 points and like we were going into a recession and there were all these problems that were associated with the tariffs. And I think what that really signaled is that there was a change. And you look at where the market's now, it's sort of record high after record high after record high. And again, that we need to get more people access to the markets. It's one of the reasons why I'm excited about the Trump savings accounts. But the reality is this has to play out. And the president clearly is seeking leverage. He wants to bring more domestic manufacturing onshore. And, you know, we've got to sort of let this play out. But overall, I think you got to give the president pretty high marks in terms of how he's negotiated this trade policy.
Right. And do you worry about AI? Lastly, Mark, we're talking Mark Hayden, CEO, financial planner, CEO of FinSeca. Do you worry about AI and the elimination of jobs? So many people I talk to wondering if their job is safe. Do you have a clue what we're about to experience?
Well, I think we do have to look back at the last job numbers. And while the economic GDP was up 3%, you know, we had sort of an anemic job growth number, 73,000, I think it was, of the last numbers. And yeah, I do worry about these transition challenges. You know, as we've seen, anytime there's a big shift in technology, a big shift, you know, that we've got a workforce that doesn't, it moves more like a battleship. It's not probably as nimble as we'd all like it to be. So yeah, I do worry about some of the transition issues associated with AI, because as we've seen, company after company report record earnings and they're doing really well, but it hasn't translated right into the robust job economy. But over the long term, there's just no question it's really good. It's going to make us better, more efficient, right, more effective. But we've got to navigate some of these transition issues.
I just want you to respond to what Tim Cook said from the White House, cut 60.
In addition to the American Manufacturing Program, we're also significantly growing our investments in AI, including expanding data center capacity in North Carolina, in Nevada, in Iowa, in Arizona, and Oregon. So we're going to keep making investments right here in America. We're going to keep hiring in America. And we're going to keep building technologies at the heart of our products right here in America, because we're a proud American company and we believe deeply in the promise of this great nation.
There's got to be some follow through, but what kind of jobs is he talking about?
I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands. You aggregate the total investment in the United States, trillions and trillions of dollars, and that's going to translate into real jobs. You know, it was a couple of decades ago where Steve Jobs said, those jobs are never coming back to the United States. Conventional wisdom, the world is flat. Those jobs are never coming back. And here you have Tim Cook talking about and promoting the fact that they're investing more in the United States. So that's, again, where there's definitely going to be some transition challenges. I think the president called it some bumps in the road as it relates to trade policy, as it relates to technology and artificial intelligence. But the thing that makes me so excited is that this country it's like a rocket ship getting ready to take off. So I feel really good about where we are. Our members across the country, they're talking to their clients, got to navigate some stuff, but overall, we're definitely headed in the right direction.
I know. We just got to find a way to get that deficit down, and hopefully the tariffs will do that. $500 billion maybe this year will certainly help. That would balance my checking account. Mark Hayden, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. The president's still speaking, talking a lot about Russia and Friday's big meeting in Alaska. Don't move.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
They love to spit in the face of the police as the police are standing up there in uniform. They're standing and they're screaming at them an inch away from their face. And then they start spitting in their face. And I said, you tell them, you spit and we hit. And they can hit real hard.
And the president of the United States is just furious. He has a human reaction. Some people might have a problem with it. I don't. Can you imagine if you have a cop in your family, you know that they can't tell you these stories. We've seen the video. You know, you go to these riots, they sit there screaming. It could be happening right now. It could happen today, especially with this Palestinian Hamas situation. So you show up and they think you could do anything because if you hit him, you touch him, they can sue you and sue the city. And he's trying to say is, I'm going to start unleashing these cops to act like human beings. So you spit in your face, you're going to get whacked around. And that's what he's saying. I'm not sure legally he can do that. But Mayor Muriel Bowser, who he put on Truth Social, he goes, she's a fine woman, get along, but I've given her enough time. She thinks that crime's under control. Cut 36.
We have spent over the last 2 years driving down violent crime in this city, driving it down to a 30-year low, in fact. Over the past year, and thank you for showing, we have decreased violent crime by 26%. The year before that, by 35%. It is true that we had a terrible spike in crime in 2023, but this is not 2023. This is 2025. And we've done that by working with the community, working with the police, working with our prosecutors, and in fact, working with the federal government.
It's still way too dangerous. I know so many people that live there, they, all the concerns are legitimate, they're real. And then we're watching these individual incidents. I just watched a reporter put up his hand. And he just said, look, this means a lot to me. He got assaulted by a group of teens and those guys got away with it and he got robbed. So it happens to reporters. It happens to running backs on the Redskins. It happens all the time. So, and I just think that if you can crack down, word gets out. They're coming. The FBI could be anywhere. Undercover cops are everywhere. There's National Guard members, at these different park locations where encampments are springing up. Not anymore, because with encampments comes trouble. Now, I'd like to find a place for these people to go. I'd like to stop handing them needles and find a place to go. But in the meantime, our Capitol is a mess compared to what it can be. And that's what the president said. I don't care who's to blame. I'm fixing it. I'm done with it. Lastly, just when it comes to Ukraine and Russia, Friday, there's going to be a lot of speculation about what took place, what's at length. President's made it clear today that he wants to get Zelensky there. He wants to referee. He doesn't want to set the agenda. And that's what the goal is. Don't expect the president to walk out and ask, go, I have a deal. He's not going to do it. Because no matter what that deal looks like, you cannot not put Ukraine in the middle of it. And he doesn't want to. Here's Vice President Vance. Cut three.
He's not afraid to put significant tariffs on countries like India for buying Russian oil. Are you going to do a similar move to China as well? They're also buying Russian oil.
Well, the president said he's thinking about it, but he hasn't made any firm decisions. Obviously, the China issue is a little bit more complicated because our relationship with China, it affects a lot of other things that have nothing to do with the Russian situation. So the president's reviewing his options and, of course, going to make that decision when he decides.
So, and that's just it. He's going to wait on China because it's complex. Today is the deadline on the tariff. So you got to be practical. Most biggest enemy, biggest military threat, biggest trading partner, but they need us too. Dave Ignatius on an analysis for the meeting. Relatively optimistic, honey.
The swap that's important here is Ukraine might give up territory in exchange for real security and a guarantee that this war won't start again after these negotiations. And that's what I'm going to be looking for at Friday's meeting. Is there any sign that Trump has learned that a peace that's simply acceding to Putin's demands is not going to be a peace that lasts? If there is pressure on Russia, if Russia really gives up something, above all, the desire to destroy Ukrainian independence, then we might have a real peace deal.
Yeah. And the one thing I look at guys like Dave Ignatius, Fareed Zakaria, they're traditionalists, you know, and the Jim Baker days, and maybe we're going to go back to that, where you have a diplomat and a secretary of state like Kissinger, and you do shuttle diplomacy, and at the last minute, the president comes in to come and sign the papers that all the other diplomats and foot soldiers in the State Department worked out. The president is totally turning that on its head. He's a guy that ran the Trump Organization, wants to do big deals, wants to take big risks, wants to use maximum leverage. And he thinks, well, who's better than me to do it? And he finally has people around him. Then instead of saying, well, that's just the way you do things, they go, okay, I get it. How can I help? And that's why I think guys like Dave Ignatius goes, you know, we try the other way. It doesn't seem to work. I'm open to something unorthodox. And then people are going to go to school on this if they're smart. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget to watch me on Jesse Tonight, primetime, 8 p.m.
Will Cain Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.